So, Dr. Uyeke, I was hoping you could start by just stating your name and position and what brings you to campus today.
So my name is Tim Uyeke. I am the Chief Medical Officer in the Influenza Division of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, or NCIRD, at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, in Atlanta, Georgia.
Great.
And I am here in Oberlin to give a talk this afternoon, and I hope that it will generate students' interest in thinking about or considering a career in public health, and really appreciate the opportunity to meet with students as well as faculty about public health and potentially integrating some public health classes into the Oberlin College curriculum. And it's especially great for me to be back here because it's been many years since I graduated, or many decades since I graduated.
So, as you mentioned, you graduated from Oberlin in 81 and you majored in biology. And so I was curious if that was kind of where your interest in studying disease came from, or if that interest was something that kind of built after Oberlin.
When I was a student at Oberlin, I did not have a specific interest in infectious diseases or going into medicine. I was not a pre-medical student. I was interested in ecology and environmental studies, and I was one of the early student members of the student faculty environmental studies program committee, long before there were classes in environmental studies at Oberlin. And so my interest was really in biological, sorry, it was in ecology and environmental health. I think that my interest in infectious diseases and public health evolved over time and was particularly stimulated by initially my interest in backpacking and sort of the outdoors, which evolved after Oberlin into traveling sort of on the backpacker low budget in developing countries, and then seeing different cultures and in particularly developing countries, and getting an idea of a lot of the challenges for global health. But I've been very fortunate to have various experiences over time that really then sort of guided me or funneled me towards public health, and particularly global health, a global health career, I guess.
So could you kind of describe and maybe define what the field of epidemiology is and what it looks at?
Sure. In epidemiology, we're basically studying diseases, and sort of on the basic level, it's studying, it's trying to address questions such as the who, what, where, why, when, and trying to understand risk factors for disease, and with the goal of trying to develop interventions to reduce disease. And basically, epidemiology is the study of diseases in populations. And there are many different aspects of epidemiology, but there's sort of descriptive epidemiology, and there's more sophisticated analytical studies. And one can look at the epidemiology of infectious diseases as well as chronic diseases, and on any population level, whereby it's a, or whether it's a small community, isolated community, or whether it's a country, or whether it's a region, or in fact the whole world population.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you specifically look at diseases that emerge through animal-human interface.
I've been interested, I'm interested in many different diseases, but I've done a lot of work at the animal-human interface, particularly people who have exposures to poultry, and specifically poultry that are infected with avian influenza A viruses. But the whole idea of people and animals, and it goes both ways. People can infect animals with human infectious diseases, but in public health, in animal health, veterinary colleagues worry about animals getting diseases from humans. Whereas in public health, we worry about people getting infections that are coming from animals, and that is sort of termed zoonotic disease or zoonotic infections or zoonotic disease transmission. So I have had this long-standing interest in looking at mostly avian influenza A viruses, but also I've been lucky to work on other infectious disease outbreaks. For example, in 2003, the world became aware of an outbreak of what at the time was called an atypical pneumonia. And it ended up being caused by a new virus, which was coming from animals and was identified as a coronavirus and termed the SARS-associated coronavirus. And that was the outbreak of SARS, or severe acute respiratory syndrome. And that virus originated, as we know, from in southern China and spread worldwide. And in recent years, I've been able to work on another outbreak, which is ongoing, which is also caused by another coronavirus. This one is called MERS, or Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, and the virus that causes that syndrome is called Middle East Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus, and this is a virus that circulates in dromedary camels in the Arabian Peninsula, and there is transmission ongoing from camels to people, most notably in Saudi Arabia, with some limited person-to-person transmission. And so another example, frankly, is Ebola virus disease. And Ebola viruses, we believe, come from bats, and then there are infections in animals, and then there's animal-to-human transmission with human-to-human transmission that causes outbreaks that may be small to very large. And most recently, during 2014 to 2016, there was a very, very large outbreak of Ebola virus disease in Western Africa, specifically Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, but with cases that were exported to other countries. And we did have 11 Ebola virus disease cases in the U.S., and there were 16 Ebola virus disease cases in Europe, and many of these cases were in healthcare workers that were infected in West Africa and were brought back to Europe or the United States for clinical management. But there is an ongoing, very large and very challenging outbreak of Ebola virus disease in the northeastern part of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And it is currently the second largest Ebola virus disease outbreak ever. And to date, as of yesterday, there were about 3,175 cases, which have been either confirmed or are deemed probable cases, of which about 67% have died. And so this is unfortunately not under control, but this is another example of emerging infectious diseases caused by viruses that originally come from some kind of animal and spill over into the human population. And as human populations encroach upon areas where we have much more exposure to various animals, there is potential for these kind of events and outbreaks to occur. And this is an ongoing challenge. And obviously from the global public health perspective, we want to go in and control the outbreak. Ideally, you don't want to prevent it in the first place. And we want to monitor the situation, and eventually you'd like to be able to have vaccines for all these different infectious diseases to prevent it. But these kind of challenges are only going to increase. And so while the main interest or the main emphasis is to control the outbreak, what we're really worried about is something blowing up much bigger to spill over to cause a problem worldwide. And example of an ongoing pandemic that you don't hear about so much in the United States these days, but in certain parts of the world is still very challenging, is the HIV epidemic, which is really a pandemic. So a pandemic, by definition, is a global outbreak. And certainly HIV is a huge ongoing pandemic since it was recognized in the early 80s. And we now know that it's been around longer than the 1980s. But a lot of progress has also been made in HIV treatment and prevention over the last several decades. Mm-hmm. So in public health, from the infectious diseases perspective, we are worried about new viruses that emerge and take off in human populations. And so to the extent that we can keep these under control in a small outbreak, great. But it really depends upon how these pathogens are transmitted from person to person, whether it's through sexual exposures, whether it's through contact with bodily fluids, whether it's from a respiratory spread, such as respiratory droplets, et cetera. And the kinds of diseases that I've worked on are caused by viruses that can cause severe lung damage, so severe pneumonia and high mortality. And these are the ones that have the potential to spread very rapidly because through people coughing to their close contacts. So that's what keeps me up at night worrying about these kinds of emerging infectious diseases.
And so in hearing you talk about your work, it's clearly very international in nature. And I'm wondering if there are particular challenges that you encounter while working in that international context.
Yeah, so my work is both sort of local and national, domestic public health. So I work on seasonal influenza most of the time, and it's been my primary focus for 21 plus years. And so every fall, winter, spring, we have outbreaks, epidemics of seasonal influenza A and B viruses in people. And it's easily transmitted from person to person through coughing, for example. But I have had a lot of experience in working on seasonal influenza worldwide, but also on outbreaks of avian influenza, A virus infections of people in different parts of the world. So I've been fortunate to work with many people at many levels of government in many countries, particularly in Southeast Asia, but in other countries. And so there are always lots of challenges, and they can be on many, many different levels. For example, different languages, different cultural, different cultures and different healthcare systems, different approaches to health, different understandings of health, educational differences, and working with people at all levels of government. So this could be within a country at the national level. Usually our partners are the ministries of health, but it could be on a more regional level, such as a provincial or state health department. And then at the local level, could be the city or town or village level, which may or may not have a public health department. And then you're dealing with hospitals at different levels, laboratories at different levels, government officials at different levels. And then there, in terms of public health is organized differently in different countries and worldwide. The two prominent global public health organizations are the World Health Organization, headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, where I work. And CDC is also the U.S. national public health organization. So we work with all 50 U.S. states as well as territories in the U.S. And then we also work with our North American partners in Canada and in Mexico. So all these, when you're talking about global public health, it really means working with different countries and working with the World Health Organization. And the World Health Organization, or WHO, has different levels of organization. So Geneva headquarters, regional WHO regional offices. And then there are WHO country offices. And so working with all these different levels of health organizations, one of the biggest challenges is communication. And this could be challenges in different personalities, challenges in one level talking to another, sharing information challenges. There are also always challenges about release of information to the public, or people trying to publish their findings. And there are always a lot of political challenges at every level. So one just tries to do their best. Everything is a team, is based upon teamwork, and you have to have very good coordination, collaboration, and most of all, really good communication. But one of the biggest challenges, I think, for public health at any level now, whether it's in the U.S. or worldwide, is the internet and social media and working with the public. And so the communication that is most important is not just among organizations or different collaborators, but it's working with communities, and it's trying to communicate both ways to and from populations, and dealing with the challenges of social media, because there is no filter on social media and one can say anything, and trying to get factual information, evidence-based recommendations out to the general public can be very challenging wherever you are in the world.
And so you mentioned the who, what, when, where, why element of your work. And in reading about your work, it seems that it almost has a lot in common with the work of an investigative journalist, for instance.
Yes.
Do you feel like that's accurate? Can you talk about that a little bit?
It's absolutely just, well, I'm not an investigative journalist, but I can imagine the same kind of questions are being asked. And so you have to try to piece together whatever kind of information you have might need to get. And it is disease detective work. We are detectives trying to figure out what caused this disease. What are risk factors for people to acquire that disease, or what are risk factors for people to have severe disease that requires admission to a hospital or an intensive care unit, or worse, results in fatal outcomes? And in particular, what interventions can we come up with that might, one, prevent this problem, or two, control it, mitigate it? And it really depends upon what the disease is, how it's transmitted from person to person, or what's the source. Maybe it's just source to people, maybe it's not person to person. And so it is really detective work. And you're really trying to gather the best evidence to try to identify the source of the problem. But first you've got to describe the problem, and then you've got to try to identify what the cause is. And then you've got to try to figure out what's the best way to address and mitigate that problem.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess my last question is, you spoke about being on that student faculty committee at Oberlin that was originally envisioning an environmental studies program here. So now, as an alum coming back to campus and seeing, you know, the AJLC houses the environmental studies program and the college is on the verge of launching into a public health concentration, what does that mean to you as somebody who was kind of working on that many years ago at the same institution to see all this happening?
I think it's really wonderful and exciting for many reasons. I am jealous of students' opportunities now. And I think it's just fantastic for that the college is offering these opportunities now for students. It's heartening to me to see this kind of progress. And so environmental studies has come a long way at Oberlin since I was a student many decades ago. And that Oberlin College is considering integrating public health as an area of concentration into the curriculum is extremely exciting for me, because now I've really devoted my career to public health. And I hope that I can contribute to moving this forward at Oberlin, and I am certain that other colleagues, other alumni, including a number of very prominent, much more prominent alumni in global public health than me, would be very interested in supporting. And I'm happy to reach out to them to encourage them to lend their expertise and experience to that effort. So I'm thrilled that Oberlin has moved forward both in environmental studies, but also hopefully in public health. And I'm certainly not that accomplished nationally or internationally, but I hope to reach out to other alumni that I know of who are very prominent and who can also lend their support to this effort. So I'm extremely excited.
Dr. Uyeke, thanks so much for your time.